Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Georgia United Credit Union. Show your team pride with the Georgia Bulldogs debit card. Check out gucu.org/godogs for more details.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
You know, in life, I try to be a good person, but I've sort of given up on the idea of being a perfect person. What that means specifically, at least in this instance, is, you know, I for the most part use PG language. I don't really say anything to anyone that I wouldn't want my kids to hear me say. And you can kind of, if you're ever around me, you kind of notice that. And maybe those of you listen every day, despite the fact this is a broadcast where we try to keep sort of a certain broadcast standard and norm, it's probably fairly easy to listen in and know that for the most part, I keep the language pretty clean. I'm a little bit more of a Jerry Seinfeld than I would be, say, a Chris Rock or a fill in the blank with your favorite comedian. That's just kind of a little bit more of the, I guess, the direction I would go in. So that's an example of me, at least to my definition, trying to be a good person. But here's where I fall far short of perfection. While I use clean language and while I use, for the most part, PG vernacular, I'm sometimes entertained when other people don't, whether that be on television or whether that be in person. And I guess Saturday was kind of a combination of the both. At the end of the game, when Georgia beat Auburn, when it owned the SEC East for a third consecutive year, and yes, for those of you watching on video, you see me wearing my Own the East t-shirt. For those of you listening radio and podcast, you should be well aware that's indeed what I'm doing, celebrating the fact that the Dogs won the division again on Saturday. You know, Kirby Smart was asked locker room post-game what his message was to the team. Do you celebrate the fact that you won the SEC East? Is this the kind of thing that you talk about? And by now, I think you're probably well aware of what Kirby Smart said. This is obviously edited for public consumption for a family broadcast, which is what we try to be. But admittedly, when Smart said this, I was one of the people in the post-game press conference laughing. Here is Kirby Smart with a very colorful description of his happiness on Saturday night. Here's Kirby.
I don't think so. I don't even think I said anything about it. I mean, I gave credit to Auburn and told our guys to handle it with you the right way. Told them, how about them Dogs? That's what I told them. But excuse my language. But I didn't say anything about the SEC East because that wasn't the goal coming in here. You know what I mean? The goal for us was to continue to get better, grow, play in a tough environment. But it really wasn't about the SEC East. Now that's a hell of an accomplishment, and I'm proud of our guys, but that's not what it's about.
So in addition to being just kind of funny and the kind of thing you typically don't hear a coach say in a press conference, especially someone like Kirby, who's typically really, really buttoned up and just trying to get through these things, it seems to be a laborious chore for him most of the time. I think there's also some meaning behind what Kirby did. I'll get into kind of some of this here now, but let me kind of start with, I guess, a little bit of a comparison. I mean, first and foremost, I think the reason why Kirby said what he said, and I do believe it was an intentional move, I think he kind of planned on doing something like this. To me, it's a little bit like what happened with Ed Orgeron after LSU beat Alabama last Saturday. And Orgeron's particular moment kind of came from the locker room, whereas Kirby knew he had microphones on him. We were led to believe a week ago that Orgeron didn't know he was being recorded, allegedly. I said at the time last week, and for those of you who are regular listeners or viewers to our program, Dog Nation Daily presented by Georgia United Credit Union, you heard me a week ago say that I believe what came out of the LSU locker room was a sanctioned leak. I believe it was Ed Orgeron trying to declare war on the Alabama program and kind of setting himself up as the alpha in comparison to what I think of as a much feeble, frail-looking Nick Saban, at least in comparison to the muscular and, frankly, pretty manly alpha dude, which is Ed Orgeron. And I thought that what Kirby did on Saturday was also an attempt to kind of step in that same arena. As a way of kind of giving a little context, here is once again also a very heavily edited clip of Ed Orgeron being caught on camera celebrating the LSU win against Alabama last week. Take a listen to this.
We're going to beat their in recruiting. We're going to beat their every time they see us.
How's that?
You understand that?
Yes, sir.
Wrong side. What?
Yeah!
So listen, here's the thing. I don't talk that way at the dinner table. I don't talk that way in business meetings. But football is just a different kind of life here. Football is one of those things where I don't care if you embrace this aspect of it or if you try to pretend it doesn't exist, but there is just something to be said that football games are won by the stronger team. And oftentimes the stronger team is led by the stronger coach. This is just sort of like an alpha type thing. This is just kind of the thing where speaking with a little bit of bass in your voice just kind of matters. And, you know, I wouldn't advise you, you know, making a sales pitch with that kind of language necessarily, but there is something about football that just makes it a little bit different kind of live. And what Orgeron did, I think, does allow him to stand out in full contrast against Nick Saban. And what Kirby Smart did on Saturday also, I think, strikes a very nice contrast with someone else on Saturday who just by comparison looks a whole lot weaker than what Kirby Smart does. When Smart says what he says and kind of comes across and gets the laughs, there's no doubt that he kind of looks like the guy in charge of the room right here, the toughest dude in the SEC East. So listen to what you just heard Kirby Smart say and compare that to, you talk about Beta, the very weak and you know, frankly, desperate version of Dan Mullen, who after his team had beaten Missouri on Saturday, knowing he was going to tune in and be a spectator watching Georgia against Auburn, think about what you just heard Kirby Smart say and compare that to what you heard Dan Mullen have to say on Saturday. The contrast here, I believe, is pretty stark. Here's Mullen.
There's a big game coming up next on CBS, Georgia at Auburn. Maybe your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, War Eagle. I don't think anybody ever think I'd say that one, but we got, you know, hey, we're still alive for the to get to the SEC championship game. So, you know, we need some help. We took care of our business today, and hopefully some people can help us out on the West.
I mean, can you imagine? I mean, that's a guy that allegedly makes millions of dollars, and he's left to say War Eagle on television? What's going to paint his face? I mean, he's going to get one of those big foam fingers and pom-pom shaker. And, I mean, Dan Mullen, this guy that Florida fans would have you believe is the best X's and O's coach in football. What was it, the ESPN guy said the other day? The top offensive play-calling mind in the sport? Well, competing against Kirby Smart has reduced him to being a fan just like anybody else. Forced to sit and watch a game on television and War Eagle and, you know, all those cheers. I mean, by comparison, what Kirby Smart said, the HBTFD, is no doubt kind of alphaing Dan Mullen off the stage. And Mullen's left to watch the game on television. So, listen, football's a tough business. Football is an aggressive sport. And sometimes aggressive people use aggressive language. And that's what Kirby Smart did here. And while that's not the language I use in life, that's not the language I use with my family, that's not the language I use in business, in the sport of football, there's no doubt that Kirby getting a chance to flex the way that he did in comparison to Dan Mullen, who was sort of forced to cheer for one of his, what you would think of as a rival, there's no doubt the comparison here, the more muscular-looking coach in this instance is Smart, and the weaker vessel here comes across as Dan Mullen. That's a pretty, pretty stark comparison, much the same way it was with Orgeron and Saban a week ago. But there is something else about what happened on Saturday I think we got to point out here. And one of the reasons why I'm wearing the Own the East t-shirt here today is because I think that even if Smart kind of strategically downplays winning the division, there is something really, really cool about it. I mean, I'm a student of history, even recent history. The fact of the matter is, for the entirety that Georgia's been competing in the 12, now 14-team SEC, since we've had divisions here in this league, Georgia's not won the division three straight years. A couple other programs have. Georgia joined that group on Saturday. I think that's a really important thing. However, something else about the clip that you just heard from Kirby Smart a moment ago I think also comes in here, because I know Connor Riley wrote a pretty good piece about Kirby's decision to downplay winning the East, and I think there's something to that, and we'll kind of get into that throughout the rest of the week. But more so, I think there's also the fact that Kirby Smart wanted to celebrate on Saturday for things having to do with, you know, for issues other than just postseason implications. This for him was not just about punching a ticket to Atlanta and being on the road to Atlanta and everything that might come with that. I think Kirby Smart being historian, that's probably an exaggeration, but someone, because he's an alumnus of Georgia who's aware of the history of the program, that's probably the better overall way to say that. I think Smart also kind of gets a sense and appreciation for just beating Auburn in and of itself being kind of a worthy goal, and Smart also talked about a little bit of that on Saturday too. Here's Kirby again.
Oh, there's always significance. Yeah, I mean, there's significance to coming here and beating a ranked team at their place in an unbelievable environment. There's a lot of significance to that and the East. But we're worried about Texas A&M.
So listen, he kept pivoting back to we're worried about Texas A&M, and as a coach, he had to do that. I can tell you on Saturday, as someone who was at Jordan-Hare Stadium and on the field after the game for our Pella Window post-game show, Texas A&M on Saturday for me was the farthest thing from my mind. And getting a chance to stand right there at the mouth of the tunnel where the Georgia locker room was and watching all those players kind of run past me to go into their own locker room to have their own private celebration after spending some time celebrating with fans, it was pretty obvious that Texas A&M was the last thing on their mind there as well. You know, for me, it was a flood of things things on Saturday. I think for every Georgia fan, much the same way. Besting Florida, winning the SEC East again, that was a really cool thing. Potentially taking another step towards possibly returning to the college football playoff, that was also a really cool thing there as well. But Georgia-Auburn is a rivalry that matters, and it matters beyond, for reasons beyond, just the postseason implications and kind of all the stuff going on there. So in that first clip you heard from Kirby Smart, where he said the phrase that every Georgia fan will remember forever, I think a lot of that had to do with knowing who it was on the other sideline, knowing the soil that Smart had been standing on all night long. Jordan-Hare Stadium, it had been a house of horrors for Georgia in the past, at least partially, including the last time Georgia had been there under Smart. But that wasn't the case on Saturday. Georgia vanquished one of its rivals again. Kirby Smart's getting pretty dadgum good at that, beating the rivals that Georgia fans care about most, besting the coaches that Georgia fans like to dislike the most. That's becoming a big part of Kirby Smart's coaching pedigree, and taking a moment to boast and kind of wink with his post-game comments, I think Kirby Smart earned that right. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by our friends at Georgia United Credit Union, and glad to have you with us no matter how you get to us today. Live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, or as a podcast wherever you find them on all the various podcast players and the world-famous DogNation.com. Just really, really glad to have you with us. And by the way, as you start thinking about SEC Championship in Atlanta and a big shopping weekend, of course, one of the great ways to do your holiday shopping here this year when you get ready to pay for those items, flash that Georgia Bulldogs debit card from our friends at Georgia United Credit Union. Everywhere you show it, everyone you show it to is going to know this is a dog fan loving life right now as the Dogs are in the thick of the playoff race. And by the way, speaking of Georgia United Credit Union, they'll give you three different design options to choose from when you open your free Georgia United checking account, which also includes options to earn interest. Now, Georgia United Credit Union is so much more than a bank. They've got 19 branch locations throughout the metro Atlanta area, providing access to 100,000 surcharge-free ATMs. Also, enhanced security features, convenient access to your money through online banking. So, membership is easy. You can find out for yourself and choose your design option for your Georgia Bulldogs debit card when you go to gucu.org/godogs. That website, once again, gucu.org/godogs. All right, good to have you with us on the program today. We'll get John Stinchcomb here in a moment, and we'll talk to John about some of the more serious aspects of Saturday's game, how the defense performed, how the offense performed, kind of everything else in between. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse here for a moment, and let me say this about Auburn. Auburn is unquestionably a great defense, and I think despite the fact the Tigers have lost three games, Auburn is probably still a good team. However, Auburn is becoming a mediocre program, and worse than that, kind of showed itself on Saturday to be what I believe a little bit of a second-rate institution. Let me give you a couple of examples why. First of all, there was the way in which video replays were shown in the stadium on Saturday, which to my eyes, now listen, during the press box, I really couldn't see the big video board too well, so it was hard for me to tell exactly what they were putting on the screen any time because of the way that my eyes were positioned kind of adjacent to the screen as opposed to being able to look right at it. But when I was on the field for the final moments of the game and the Seth Williams non-catch happened that Gus Malzahn and others thought was supposed to be a catch, you know, I thought the replay official, or I should say the replay people running that video board there, did a really interesting job of kind of creating doubt among Auburn fans what the call was going to be, as opposed to showing the full context of the catch, which I think makes the overturn on the part of the replay officials a little bit easier to understand. And frankly, while that may be a good way to get the fans kind of stirred up into a frenzy, I think it runs the risk of making the Auburn coaches and players look pretty bad after the game. There was a lot of pouting and whining about what Auburn thought should have happened from an officiating standpoint. I think you blame some of the in-house stuff going on at Jordan-Hare Stadium for when the players and coaches end up looking so bad. Someone who was, I think, less than his best post-game was Marlon Davidson, who is a very good player, but AL.com captured a quote from him post-game that I want to read to you. This isn't a good look for Auburn. He says, I felt like the refs were against us. Boy, that's not winner talk right there, is it? He says, I can't lie about that. It hurts because I feel like some of the calls should have went the other way, for sure. They were getting more calls than we got, but I can't speak on the refs. That's their decision to make. But you know it just hurts when you see games being taken away by refs. Boy, bad look for Davidson here. He says, you have to beat the refs and the team. That's very hard to do, no matter what team you are. That's Marlon Davidson. And frankly, I think those words from Davidson, as kind of sour and kind of sort of unprofessional as they are, I think that's a reflection of some of the behavior we're seeing from Dan Mullen and some of the, I'm sorry, Gus Malzahn. Boy, easy mistake to make. Some of the stuff you were seeing from Gus Malzahn post-game on some of that kind of stuff there as well. Just not a good look from Auburn post-game, and I think Marlon Davidson is a perfect example of that, and I think you blame some of the ways in which the replays are being shown on the stadium video board for why some of the Auburn players are behaving the way they are. You know, obviously there are things that could have been called. The face mask, I won't argue against that too much, but the onside kick, I mean, that's a rule. The overturn deal, watch the full Seth Williams non-catch in context. I think it's all maybe a little bit easier to understand. But beyond that, let me make one more quick point here. I don't have any video to show you of this because I didn't capture it, but I certainly heard plenty of people talking about it. There was the video shown over and over again on Saturday, allegedly, and I've seen this on enough message boards to believe it must be true, of Aaron Murray getting a cheap shot late hit from, going back to the 2010 game. My take on this is going to be actually a little bit different than you might think it is, because some people are going to say, how come you're going to show what is essentially an illegal play to incite fans in this game right now? That seems kind of low rent and cheap. But beyond that, let me just say it this way. What's the one knock that you constantly hear from non-Georgia fans to UGA fans? Like, what's the one thing that you hear over and over again? Oh, well, these Georgia fans live in the past. These Georgia fans are dreaming of a national championship that was now 39 years ago. I mean, let's be honest. Friends can be honest with each other. We know that people say that about Georgia all the time, right? We know that. Are you familiar with the internet phrase, the meme that's out there about how life comes at you fast? Isn't it kind of funny that some of these same fan bases that kind of mock Georgia fans for living in the past, how deep into the past they're having to reach for a moment worth bragging about? There was the lead up to the Georgia-Florida game here this year where Urban Meyer was bragging about calling those timeouts against Georgia back in 2008. It was 10 years ago. That's what Florida does to get excited for a Georgia-Florida game now. Reach back 10 years ago for something. The Aaron Murray hit that was shown on the video board at Auburn over and over again on Saturday. You realize that was 2010? I'm right about that, right? That's 2010, right? I mean, we're in the last year of a decade now. That was the first year of the decade. That's how far Auburn's having to reach back for a video clip that can kind of talk trash against Georgia. Boy, it's kind of funny about some of the rival fan bases that used to mock Georgia for living in the past, how far into the past they're having to go to find something to make Georgia look bad. Boy, it is an interesting time for the Dogs when it comes to a lot of these rivals. Hey, before I get John Stinchcomb, let me also quickly tell you about my friends at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. You know how I feel about this place. It is a beautiful, beautiful getaway in the North Georgia Mountains, kind of a short drive from here, and this time of year it could not be more beautiful. Whether it be the late fall and some of the leaves, or as you head towards winter in the month of December, you know, Christmas decorations all over the place, fires in the fireplaces. I had one in my room the last time I was there. This is a really world-class mountain resort, and you can be there right now in honor of Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa's 25th anniversary. You can also save 25% off select dates this month and in the month of December, but you got to act quickly to take advantage of this. The promo code is BVR25. That's BVR25. Go to BrasstownValley.com. You can get a lot of information on that. All right, I have got a special look ahead to Saturday's game for Georgia later on the program. Why it's maybe more special than you even realize. We will do that coming up. But for now, on more of Georgia versus Auburn, the big win for the Dogs to help clinch the division, let's talk to our buddy John Stinchcomb right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
All right, well, say hello to John Stinchcomb here on what is a very happy day around Dog Nation Daily, presented by Georgia United Credit Union. And, you know, John, before we're done, and I apologize for keeping you waiting, but before we're done, I want to get into some of the more serious aspects of Saturday's game, what we still haven't seen yet from the Georgia offense, kind of, you know, maybe the way the defense is kind of holding all this together. We'll get into some of the more serious aspects of this in a moment. But before that, though, as a guy who was a part of the first UGA team to win an SEC East, what does it mean to you to see Georgia now win the division for three consecutive years? What does it mean to you to see Georgia beat Auburn for what I believe is the 12th time in 15 tries? Complete dominance here in the Deep South's oldest rivalry. As a alumnus, stakeholder in the program now, what is the state of affairs for you after Saturday?
Oh, that's a big deal. I mean, that is a big deal. Three times in a row, SEC East champs representing our side of the best conference in football. I just think it's a testament to Coach Smart and that program and the health of it all. I mean, that the fact that we have such bragging rights over Auburn right now, and, you know, I'm listening to you say they're referencing things that are 10 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to be happy to be a Dog right now. It's a great era to be a Dog fan.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I'll add to this, John, you've been with me, whether it be for Marlo's matchup shows or anything else, you know how much I love talking about playoff races and, you know, the chance to win a national championship. I'm really into all that. But I don't want to let the Final Four, you know, the biggest prize in the sport, obscure from other things that matter. Rivalry games still matter to me. And I was happy on Saturday. I'm speaking as a fan here for a moment. I was happy on Saturday for things that had nothing to do with the college football playoff. And frankly, nothing to do with, even though I've got the Own the East t-shirt on today, frankly, things that had nothing to do with the SEC East. I just think beating Auburn's fun for reasons that have nothing to do with anything beyond other than I remember as a kid when this is as much as a Georgia fan could dream about. And to see Georgia doing that in Jordan-Hare Stadium, that for me is fun all by itself.
I'm with you, man. I've lived through it, and I think I'm probably surrounded by more Auburn fans than any other of our rivals. So anytime you get those bragging rights and you can shut them down yet again for another year, it's a good thing. I mean, it's a healthy rivalry. I've got a lot of respect for them. But, you know, when you win and you've won consistently, man, it feels good.
Yeah, it does. Let's get serious here for a moment, though, and kind of drill down on some of the more, I guess, technical aspects of the game. The offensive story is this. Georgia really founded on three drives. Obviously, the explosive play to Dominic Blaylock, which is something we've all been wanting to see, and a couple really nice converted opportunities inside the red zone. And then beyond that, and this is not an exaggeration, there was really no offense to speak of whatsoever. This was a game where Georgia went all in a couple times and got the points that it needed and really didn't do anything else on any drive the rest of the game. I believe it's a total of 9 threes and out. I mean, this was a kind of feast or famine type day for Georgia offensively. John, putting my analyst hat on here for a moment, I'm going to choose to evaluate this as, hey, this is Georgia offense hasn't been great all year. We kind of know what it is by this point in time. They were on the road, hostile environment, really good defense. This is about as much that could be expected right now, and we'll see if the results get better against maybe, like, say, lesser defenses, which I believe LSU is, if those two teams end up playing in the SEC championship. So that's kind of my overall take on this, but admittedly, it is eye-opening to see this late in the year. You know, the Georgia offense, the die has just kind of been cast about what it is. You and I have had very candid conversations on this in the past. When we were at Marlowe's at Brookhaven last Thursday, a lot of people had some very pointed questions for you about what you're seeing on this. I mean, after another day on Saturday where it was enough offense to win, and that's the headline, full stop, but then beyond that, but it's still not that much offense. You know, what do you make of this scenario, kind of looking at it from, I guess, the 360-degree point of view?
Well, I sent it to a picture to you at the end of last week,
yep.
And it's from DJ Shockley's Instagram post, and he's visiting Texas Tech, and on the wall it says, "We are what we put on tape," and I think that statement holds true for what you've seen on tape is they show flashes at times, both in the run game and the pass game of what could be, but it's just not consistent. And I think there's an identity to Georgia which wins games, but it also gives you a little bit of pause because our offense has, you know, as many playmakers as you see in the offensive line that you have, I think there's got to be some level of consternation of why are we not able to be more productive. Now, with that said, you just won the SEC East. You've only lost one game, and that's because you had 4 turnovers. And this is a college football playoff caliber team that's got a chance to be one of the Final Four. So with all the frustration and the concern, they still put it together, and this is a great season. But, how many 3-and-outs were there? 9?
I think it was 9, yeah.
Only convert 3 games. It just seems like there's so many playmakers out there. You've got arguably the best running back in college football. And, you know, he averaged over 5 yards a carry, probably close to 6 yards a carry. And yet still, it's like there's something left to be desired with this offense. And, you know, I don't really have my finger on it, but at this point, I don't expect some miraculous change of heart that things start clicking. You're too deep in the season. They have an identity. We're going to protect the ball. We're going to rely on a dominant defense and not turn the ball over and control the clock. And let's give some credit to Auburn here, because that front four is something fierce, and that defense overall is a very respectable group, and they had a heck of a game. I mean, it's 2 yards allowed in the fourth quarter when the game was on the line. I mean, they put their team in a position to have a chance in what otherwise looked like it was going to be a runaway. So, you know, if there's reason for concern, and I think perspective is huge here, reason for concern as to why there might be a limitation on the national championship race, it's because the offense still doesn't seem to click.
Well, let me try to put at least a little bit of a positive spin on this. You can tell me if this is fair or not. While the offensive results on Saturday clearly left something to be desired, I think there is a case to be made that the rest of the season, it's going to at least be a little bit easier than it was on Saturday. Even if Auburn's not quite the best defense in the country, and like say a team like Ohio State might be, who Georgia might face in the college football playoff, at the very least, that game's going to take place on a neutral side. This was top-flight defense. You can watch some of the video stuff that, like say, Cole Kublik has put out. You know, Derek Brown is a load to deal with. I had a chance to observe some NFL scouts watching this game on Saturday. They were raving about the Auburn secondary. You know, obviously they're playmakers at all three phases of this Auburn defense. Playing it in its own stadium at least is a mitigating factor here. Georgia offensively could have still been better, but playing a good team on the road, I think, is kind of something to consider here. A&M on Saturday is at home. SEC championship is in a stadium that Georgia, you know, knows pretty well, a venue where it's won an SEC championship before, and then neutral site stuff the rest of the way. So I don't want to put too much lipstick on what might be a pig, but nonetheless, can't you make at least a little bit of a case that the rest of the season at least gets, for either because it'll be a lesser defense or because it's a different venue, there's a chance it at least gets a little easier from here, right?
Yeah, no question. And Auburn has, in my opinion, that the front four and quality depth behind it, and linebackers and secondary, but that front four is special. We haven't seen many guys with as much talent as Marlon and Derek in recent history play beside one another. So I think our offensive line did a pretty admirable job against those guys, and they both had their moments, but you expect that when you're playing elite players. I thought they performed better up front than anticipated for me against them. I think you look at Auburn's defense, and they're good, man. They're a good team, and it was going to be a battle. You're not going to dominate those guys, and that's fair to say. With that said, our offense performance still leaves a little bit to be desired, yep. And that's with all due respect and credit going towards Auburn. And you look at the rest of the regular season, and there are a few teams either before or after that have the talent on that defensive side of the ball that Auburn did in the way they play. So, yes, things look up. Even in the SEC championship game against LSU, I do think that Auburn is probably playing a little bit more solid than LSU, and they've got better talent, especially up front, than LSU. But they play a different style of football, and it's going to be an interesting game. I can't wait for it, but I guess I'm going to have to, because we've got a couple more before we get there.
That's exactly right. As Kirby reminded many times on Saturday, still Texas A&M to come. I want to ask about the Georgia defense here in a moment. Before that, let me also remind folks about Kroger's. We get ready for the holiday season. That means planning meals, and unfortunately, planning meals takes a lot of time. Kroger can help give you some of that time back. They can give you a great, high-quality, delicious holiday meal without a lot of heat and prep time by you. When you utilize the Kroger chef, here are the choices. You get ham or turkey, all the sides. I'm talking about stuffing, rolls, casserole, mashed potatoes, pumpkin pie, whole much more. It's a great deal. It's just $70. And you can order a lot of different ways. The Kroger app, online at Kroger.com, or you can just stop by and talk to somebody there at the Kroger Deli. But if you want to get this by Thanksgiving, you're going to order by November the 25th. So we're coming up on that date, so make sure you take care of that to have your holiday meal ready to go by Thanksgiving time, courtesy of our friends at Kroger. All right, John, let me ask you a question, and it may be a little tough to answer this on the basis of watching the game on television, but you know, Auburn does come back a little bit in this game. For the most part, I kind of write this off as, hey, I didn't expect Auburn to just lay down and die for the full 60. I thought they'd show a little fight before the game was over, and for the most part, the Tigers should be given credit for doing that. However, there's a little bit of a contrast between Kirby Smart, who says, no, we weren't doing anything different defensively. This was Gus Malzahn just finding some success, compared to maybe some of the fans who watched it on TV and say, no, that's not true. I saw you go into a zone. I saw you get a little bit, I'm going to use air quotes for this, soft in comparison to the way that you've been playing a little earlier in the game, maybe not trying to give up a big play. What are you kind of come down on this? Was this a good defense against a guy in Gus Malzahn who just kind of found something that worked late? Do you think that Georgia kind of took its foot off the gas, so to speak, defensively in the fourth quarter? What do you think happened there?
Well, I'm going to reserve the right to review the film, which I haven't yet. But I do think that one series where they scored their first touchdown, it definitely appeared like there was two or three plays where it was much more of a softer zone rather than the man coverage. And there was a distinct difference. I think every fan saw that. Now, whether that's the plays that were called, I don't know. But yes, there was a difference, and it was evident. I mean, that series alone, and then at that point, Auburn in their own, on their own turf with their own fan base, who had been pretty much disengaged for the past half of football, at least two quarters worth, they're back in it, and you have an inspired offense based on one series, and they felt like they had some life. And quite honestly, I'm still at a loss as to that onside kick. I mean, I've never heard that rule. You block before 10 yards? I'm that was a new one to me. So it became a little bit of a scramble late in the game.
So let me defend the onside kick thing here for a moment, because I understand where you're coming from on this. If you watch, like, NFL games on a typical Saturday, most of the college football games on a typical Saturday, for the most part, the onside kick is just, it's gone from the sport, right? Because you can't line up an imbalanced line anymore. I mean, one of the ways in which the overemphasis, or I guess added emphasis, better way to say that, the added emphasis on player safety, one of the ways which I think that's changed the game more than anything else is the way that NFL teams just don't convert onside kicks anymore. I mean, almost never happens. College teams just don't really convert onside kicks anymore. So while I'm not really a stickler for the rules, that to me is the least interesting part of the sport, it is not a surprise for me to see an onside kick taken away by a rule, because, you know, across the country on Saturdays, certainly the NFL on Sundays, the way in which you used to could kind of put everybody on one side, go have a big collision and see who came up with the football, for the most part now, that aspect of the game has almost been completely eliminated.
Yeah, I don't know how you onside kick the ball. I really don't, because quite honestly, it looked like a well-executed onside kick.
Yeah.
It looked like it was placed well, and they I mean, everybody blocks. They're, you usually send blockers out in front. Now, again, you can't overload like you used to, and that makes sense. But the call on the field was Auburn's receiver, Schwartz, I believe it was blocking before the ball made it 10 yards.
Yeah.
So I don't know a scenario, and then you can engage in a block where, I am grateful it turned out the way it did, although it was backed up by a three and out by Georgia's offense, so it wasn't that much more time off the clock, including two incomplete passes. But with that said, it's an interesting deal. I mean, if we were in that scenario, if Georgia's in that scenario, and we need an onside kick, I don't know how you can get the ball back anymore. They've legislated it to the point where there's not a whole lot of options left.
No, I think you're right about that. And it's John, obviously great to get your insight on the game as Georgia takes a step forward towards being back in the SEC championship game, but a big one looming on Saturday against Texas A&M that certainly has plenty of playoff implications. We'll talk about that on our Marlowe's matchup coming up this Thursday at 6 p.m. By the way, given the fact that Georgia will now play a 13th game, there's a very good chance there'll be another Marlowe's broadcast on the horizon here as well. So, John, thank you so much for being with us here today. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Georgia United Credit Union. Hope you have a terrific week. We appreciate your time, and we'll look forward to speaking to you soon.
Absolutely. You know what? At the end of the day, B.A., it was a huge win against Auburn, a bitter rival. And Georgia just clinched yet another SEC East championship. So it's a great day to be a dog.
Boy, I think that's well said, John. Thank you so much for your time.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, so I get the point that John's making all the way around there when it comes to the onside kick, that if you're a team that wants one, that needs one, it's pretty depressing and, frankly, kind of irritating to have the rules. So I don't know. I guess legalistic when it comes to what an onside kick looks like now. But I'll make this comparison. If you're a team that's put your hopes on winning a game on an onside kick, that's a little bit like putting your retirement hopes on winning the lottery, right? I mean, onside kicks have just been legislated out of the game now. So I don't know what to tell you. If that's all you've got left in terms of your strategy for winning, then you've dug yourself a pretty big hole. And ultimately, I think that's what it kind of comes down to for Auburn on Saturday. It's Dog Nation Daily. It's presented by Georgia United Credit Union. We're going to talk more Georgia coming up. But for now, let's go around the SEC here. Cruise around the SEC as part of our SEC Through. Brought to you by our friends at Royal Caribbean. And boy, the beautiful, I'm talking about one of the most beautiful ships in their fleet. A gorgeous, gorgeous, amplified ship, Oasis of the Seas. It's all new. It's going to debut later on this month. It's the biggest amplification yet from the fleet there at Royal Caribbean. A lot of amazing things added here to Oasis of the Seas. Ultimate Abyss, which is the tallest water slide at sea, which is like an amazing, fun experience. Great entertainment options like Playmaker, Sports Bar, and Arcade. You can just sit there and watch all the big games while you're at sea, kind of floating around the ocean. I mean, it's an amazing experience. Playmaker, Sports Bar, and Arcade's amazing. Music hall for like all the live music and stuff. Just an incredible, incredible experience. The Lime and Coconut's a really cool bar there as well. And Bionic Bar, and you really got to go and see this. If you go to Royal Caribbean, you can see this for yourself, royalcaribbean.com. Bionic Bar is like this robotic bar where, like, you know, the drinks are kind of like made and served by these robotic arms. It's really fun stuff. RoyalCaribbean.com to kind of see more about Oasis of the Seas and get in touch with a travel advisor and book the vacation that I know that you need. All right, let's do a couple stories here. Tua Tagovailoa, obviously a devastating injury for him on Saturday. And listen, college football is about rivalries and, you know, teams you like, teams you don't, but you don't wish, obviously, what happened to him on anyone. And Tua legitimately seems like a really good guy, and certainly he has had a great sort of dignity with the way that he's handled this injury setback here. Now we have obviously have prayers going out to him for that. No one disagrees with that. However, the part where there is going to be some disagreement, the part where there's going to be a lot of debate, is the handling of this by Nick Saban. Now, ultimately, I have a real problem with the way that Saban behaved after the injury, seemingly trying to push responsibility for this onto to his family or you know, other voices, really, you know, kind of making it be someone else's decision that ultimately Tagovailoa was in the game. You make $8 million a year. If you're the coach, you have to own the decision one way or another. Tua's either healthy or he's not. If he's healthy, he plays. That's obviously the assumption you would have about any player in any situation like that. I think some of the media criticism of the Tua injury, the fact that the hip injury occurs the week after an ankle injury, or several weeks after an ankle injury, kind of been a big storyline. I think that's connecting dots that are not potentially there. I think the media gets it wrong when it comes to injuries all the time. The media is just constantly fooled by randomness. There are random things that happen, and the media is constantly trying to find meaning for things that might be random. I'm not a doctor. I'll be interested to hear how doctors weigh in on this, but this wouldn't be the first time that the media at large has looked at a random set of occurrences and decided that there was some sort of narrative to be attached to that. However, beyond that, how you feel about this, I think, determines how you want college football to look in the future. If you're an NBA fan, or if you're even aware of the NBA, you know that, quote, load management is a thing where veteran players, and in some cases younger players, don't play on back-to-back nights because they want to rest. They don't want to get injured, so they make up an injury and just come up with some sort of reason why they're not playing. But ultimately, it's load management. It's a guy who says, I don't feel like playing tonight, so I'm not going to. One of the things that makes college football so great as a sport is that kind of stuff doesn't exist in the sport. The regular season matters. The games themselves matter. The idea that the Mississippi State game is a game that Tua shouldn't have even been playing in is, I think, pushing the sport to a direction that you don't want it to go. And it's not the fault of the playoff that this happened, because, frankly, people have been running up scores on teams well before we had a playoff or a BCS or anything like that. I, for one, don't want to usher in the era of load management into college football, so I'm not going to criticize Tua Tagovailoa for being in a game that Alabama was winning 35-7 near the end of the first half. And while I don't like Saban, I'm not going to be a part of the pylon for him on this. Didn't like his behavior in terms of explaining away the incident, but in terms of Tua Tagovailoa playing, I think that's a very defensible decision, I do. A couple other things here real quick, and you know, I'm kind of a blowhard at times. I obviously give you a lot of hot takes, and I'm never shy about telling you the way that I think. Hopefully, I'm going to be right a few times. You can think of some examples where I have been. You know, for instance, I told you before the start of the season that Dan Mullen and Florida weren't really ready to compete with Georgia. As it turns out, I was right. Georgia dominated that game a couple of weeks ago. Georgia owned the East again for a third straight year. However, here's where I think I need to be at least a little bit fair and balanced. Florida has actually played better in its non-Georgia games than I probably thought it would. Last couple of weeks, I've expected a little bit of a letdown from them against Vanderbilt and against Missouri. Vanderbilt's a team that really kept it close with Florida a couple of years in a row a couple of years ago, and obviously Missouri was riding a two-game winning streak coming against the Gators on Saturday, and Florida handled both those games easily. So it is fair to say that Dan Mullen has established something at Florida. Now, it's still a wide, you know, degree away from being what Kirby Smart established at Georgia, but in terms of being this wilting flower that's going to fold up at the end of the season, credit to Florida for not doing that. I think the balance of power in the SEC East is still heavily tilted towards Georgia, but you got to give Florida a little bit of credit for not folding up the tent this year. It pains me to say that, but I'll at least do that. And then one more thing. I'm already seeing some message board chatter about Auburn fans and their growing dissatisfaction with Gus Malzahn. It feels like we do this each and every year. But keep your eye on this in terms of how this unfolds over the next couple of weeks. There'll obviously be plenty written about it and said about it, especially given the fact the Arkansas job is open again. I've already openly speculated about this. And this, to me, comes down to an issue of Auburn is a good team, but not a great team. Their pecking order, third in the SEC West, to me is somewhat explainable, just given the fact that Alabama and LSU out-recruit Auburn. But third in the SEC West is ultimately not all that bad. I mean, it still makes you one of the top 15 teams in the country. I have very little doubt that's what Auburn is. But sometimes people just get restless. Gus Malzahn gets tired of hearing complaints all the time. Auburn fans get tired of him not kind of breaking through what, at least since 2013, has appeared to be a glass ceiling. They've lost a lot of games in that span. So keep your eye on that for right now and see if that gets a little hotter before it's all said and done. We'll make that your SEC through as we cruise around the SEC, courtesy of our friends at Royal Caribbean. Now, let me turn my attention back to Georgia. And for a moment, I'm sure we'll do more Auburn during the week and the win that was. Let me kind of spin it forward, look ahead to Texas A&M on Saturday, and I've been saying this a lot privately and probably some publicly as well, that Saturday is going to be, and I don't mean to be corny, y'all, let me apologize for one second if it comes across as corny, but going to be a little bit emotional for me on Saturday to watch this group of seniors play its final home game. This has been a special group. I mean, you know, J.R. Reed and kind of every name you want to mention here, these seniors have meant a lot to Georgia. We'll give those guys their due as we head towards the week. But in addition to that, it's also this 2017 class that you better believe has not only been special to UGA, but special here to Dawg Nation. I mean, remember all the great recruiting coverage we had of those guys coming into the program and the Christmas commitments video and kind of everything else? There were at least a few of those guys from the class of 2017, guys who've been with us for Marlowe's Tavern broadcasts. And I mean, just so many guys that we've gotten to know well, and you've all, you know, gotten to know as fans and appreciating their Georgia career. Some of them are going to go to the NFL too, and some of those decisions will be made later on. But there's a very good chance that a lot of big-time fan favorites play their last game at Sanford Stadium on Saturday, standing on the turf at Dooley Field for the last time. In fact, Kirby Smart on Saturday was kind of asked about, he'll talk about the seniors a lot today, I'm sure, when he does his press conference. On Saturday, he was asked about the 2017 class, and Kirby gave the classy answer that you'd expect. Here's Kirby.
That class of 2017 with DeAndre and Jake and all that, was, you know, this 3-for-3 in SEC East titles, like, what has it been like for you watching them grow from, you know, they were that recruiting class of savages, and now they're the foundations of a three-time SEC East champion team?
Yeah, I'm really proud of them. I'm proud of that whole class. They've done a great job, and we're getting ready for Texas A&M.
So listen, obviously he's he's going to be asked those questions a lot. Right now he wants to think about Texas A&M, but maybe there's a way we can do both. Can you work with me on something here just for a second? Think about the 2017 guys who mean a lot to you. Think about the current crop of UGA seniors who mean a lot to you. Is there any better gift that Dog Nation, I mean the fan base at large, not just our little corner of the internet world here, is there any better gift that Dog Nation could give to these seniors and these possible final home game juniors other than making the Texas A&M atmosphere not just the best of the season, but maybe the best of all time at Sanford Stadium, given the fact that Georgia's got a lot to play for against a good team, coming off a big emotional win, making Sanford Stadium an emotional place to be on Saturday, your best for their last? So here's what we're going to do here this week. We're going to talk about a special hashtag, hashtag best for last. We're going to talk about that a lot this week, a way for Dog fans to do something special for the guys playing for the last time at Sanford Stadium, creating an atmosphere that will be remembered forever for a team that very well might be remembered forever. That sounds like a pretty good idea to me. All right, so we'll talk a lot about that coming up in the days to come as we head towards the Aggies on Saturday. Let me also quickly remind you of this. My friends at MyBookie, you know, you got Monday Night Football tonight. You got all kinds of live action going on during the NFL games and obviously the Saturday stuff there as well. So if you've heard me talking about this and you haven't kind of gotten in and gotten involved and made your own bets, it makes the games really more fun to watch. Well, you know, MyBookie Online can also make you a winner before you even place your first bet. So simply just find MyBookie by typing it into your browser. Just type MyBookie into your browser and they'll kind of do the work for you. They'll get you where you need to go. And then after that, use the promo code DOGNATION. It's all one word. By the way, it's supposed to be DAWG. When you use the promo code DOGNATION with our friends at MyBookie, you get a big first deposit bonus. Up to $1,000 for your first deposit doubled. That's good stuff there. MyBookie, use the promo code DOGNATION. By the way, Gator Hater Updater, as the Dogs stand on top of the East once again, how about 1,115 days? Take that, Dan Mullen. We'll see you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Georgia United Credit Union.